KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, sitting in this morning for Michael Krasny. Last week, a select group of 24 men and women got the phone call.
I came back to the office and got a message on my answering machine, and that message was enough to cause some palpitations.
That was Dr. Claire Kremens, one of 24 scientists, playwrights, engineers, and inventors whose work is so promising that they netted a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship, the so-called Genius Award. In the hour ahead, we'll hear from four Bay Area fellows, two from this year's class and two from years past, and learn where their work may take them and us in the future. The MacArthur winners, next on Forum, after this. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, sitting in this morning for Michael Krasny. Saul Griffith is an Emeryville inventor. He's developing a way to make low-cost corrective lenses available for those living in developing nations. Claire Kremen is an assistant professor of environmental science at UC Berkeley. Her work focuses on saving endangered species. Peter Glick is the president of the Oakland-based Pacific Institute, where he researches the relationship between water, climate change, and health. And Claire Tomlin teaches at both Stanford and UC Berkeley and is developing a system to help avoid airplane crashes. These four Bay Area residents share at least one common experience. They all received a very special phone call from the MacArthur Foundation. Each year, the MacArthur Foundation designates 20-some individuals as MacArthur Fellows, the so-called Genius Award, which offers its recipients a no-strings-attached grant of $500,000. Two of our guests were just named MacArthur Fellows last week, and two received the honor in years past. This morning, we're going to hear from all of them about their work, about their dreams, and about one heck of a phone call. Joining us now, Saul Griffith, co-founder of Emeryville's Squid Lab, where he's working on a variety of inventions. He got the call last week. Mr. Griffith, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us, too, is Dr. Peter Glick. He's the president of the Pacific Institute for Studies in Development, Environment, and Security. He was named a MacArthur Fellow in 2003. Dr. Glick, good morning.
Good morning.
And Dr. Claire Tomlin joins us as well. She was named a fellow a year ago. She teaches in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Sciences at UC Berkeley and also holds a teaching appointment at Stanford University. Dr. Tomlin, good morning.
Good morning.
And as I mentioned earlier, we'll also hear in a bit from Dr. Claire Kremen. She is someone who received a MacArthur Fellowship, but unfortunately she's traveling this morning, and we'll hear a short pre-recorded interview with her in just a moment. I can't resist not asking you about the call and what it was like to receive that call. And I understand, Saul Griffith, when you received the call, they asked you a question. What was it?
First they ask, are you Saul Griffith? And I say yes. And then I think the next question was an introduction. I am so-and-so from the MacArthur Foundation. And then they say, do you know who the MacArthur Foundation are? And being a good NPR listener, I said, oh, they're the people who sponsor NPR. And then after that, they say, do you know about the fellowships? And I say, I have had friends who are fellows before. And then they say, well, you'll receive one this year. And I'm then trying to identify which of my friends has a voice like this this obvious hoax call on the line.
And how long did it take you to really believe that this was actually happening to you?
I don't think I believed it until the actual press releases at midnight.
I thought you were going to say until the check arrived in the mail, but I assume
I haven't seen that yet. So I still shouldn't believe, but I think the heavy press coverage was probably enough.
And Dr. Tomlin, what about your call a year ago?
Very similar to Saul's. I got the call, and I was actually teaching at Berkeley, and they were trying to get a hold of me at Stanford. So I came back from teaching one of my classes, and there was an email from the MacArthur Foundation, and they asked me to call them. So I called, and they said same kinds of things. Do you know what the MacArthur Foundation is? Do you know about the MacArthur Fellows? And then they asked me if I was sitting down or if I was holding a baby. And then they told me that and they asked me who I knew that had won one. And then they said, well, now you know someone even more intimately who's just won one. So,
and did you believe it?
I it took me a little while to believe it. It's one of those things that you're very surprised, and it's sort of disbelief at first, I guess. But later that afternoon, it had sunk in a little bit, and then probably by the next week, when the press release happened, that's when I guess it really hit me as well.
One of the reasons, Peter Glick, why it must be such an extraordinary experience is this is not something you apply for. It's not like a grant that you put in an application for. So it really is the proverbial call from out of the blue.
Well, it is completely from out of the blue. You can't apply. You don't know who the nominators are. You don't know who the reviewers are. It's sort of a mysterious process. I mean, I'm sure to the credit of the MacArthur Foundation, or else they would no doubt be inundated with people who want to apply or want to nominate somebody. They have their own process, and it's a mystery still to those of us who have been beneficiaries. But it's hard to deny that even though my call came at 6:30 in the morning and woke me up, it's sort of hard to complain.
Yeah, pretty good wake-up call. The other Bay Area MacArthur Fellow for 2007 is Claire Kremen, and she unfortunately was unable to join us today, as I mentioned. She teaches at UC Berkeley and is working on a number of projects to try and halt species extinction. But we were able to talk to her as well a little bit earlier about her current work and what she hopes to do with what will happen next.
Well, I am not entirely sure what I'm going to do with it, but I definitely would like to use it to help free up some time so that I can focus more on the interesting part of what I do. There's, all of us have a lot of mundane aspects to our job, and I seem to find a lot of my time is now used in managing all of these projects and, real details of sort of administrative details. And I'd just love to offload that to somebody else and have more time to actually think and, put things together and, do the creative part of the work.
Tell us something about the work that you've done.
Well, I've explored a number of different strategies for protecting biodiversity, from the sort of very fundamental strategy of designing parks to protect biodiversity and actually seeing that through to implementation. That we've done that work in Madagascar, and we're still working in Madagascar to help the government identify the best areas for biodiversity conservation. Given that you can't protect everything, you want to strategically focus on the areas that are going to capture the most biodiversity, and looked at it from the perspective of what do these species do for us. So that's really what we call in the business the ecosystem service approach, thinking about how nature provides us with essential services that we need to survive ourselves. And the one I've focused on in particular are pollination services. 35% of our food production depends on animal pollinators that come and actually move the pollen from the female flowers or female parts of the flowers to the male part.
How might you take your work then in a new direction if the MacArthur Grant is this literally once-in-a-lifetime sort of opportunity to do something that you most wanted to do but you didn't think you'd get funded? Just curious about how you might use that to take the work that you've done but perhaps angle it in a new direction.
Well, one thing I definitely want to do is we've already started working on this, but we're working now to restore pollination services in the Central Valley, that is to bring back the habitat for the bees and see if the bees will follow. It's sort of we call it in ecology the field of dreams hypothesis. If you build it, will they come? And we think they probably will. So we've already embarked on this, but it's a fairly small-scale project involving just about 6 or 7 restoration sites. The farmers are the ones that actually do the restoration, and we advise them on what to incorporate. But I also think about possibly exploring some new dimensions, new avenues as well.
Such as?
Well, I've been thinking more and more about the issue of global climate change and what we can do about it. So I'm not really sure where I'll fit in, but I'm going to be thinking about that over the next few months.
Dr. Claire Kremen, one of this year's Bay Area winners of the MacArthur Fellowship, for 2007. She teaches at UC Berkeley, talking about the work that she's currently doing and what she hopes to do in the future. Joining us now for the rest of our hour are three people who are also trying to think through how they're going to use, in some cases, this new award, and in others, contemplating what they have already accomplished with it. Saul Griffith, as one of the newest winner that's in the room with us today, how are you beginning to think about how this award might shape some of the additional work that you could do?
I've never actually had a resource that wasn't earmarked for a very specific project or reason. So it's actually been kind of a delightful week to think about doing all of the sort of projects that you could never rationalize, things that should exist for no other reason than they should perhaps exist. I don't know that I've come up with the right set of ideas, but, you know, things like, why isn't there a software program to catalog every paper airplane ever made, you know, designed for eight-year-olds? Things like that are the sort of things I think that, you know, would never really get funded by the National Science Foundation or other things, but perhaps should just exist for the world. So I'm taking that approach for now, but I'm not going to commit to any particular course of action.
You sometimes refer to yourself as a playful scientist. Is this an opportunity in some ways to play a bit? You work on very important things, very useful things like corrective lenses for people who live in third world countries, but is part of the gift of this an opportunity to be a bit more playful?
I hope so. I one of my other activities, I write a comic book with a fellow called Nick Dragotta and another fellow called Joost Bonson, and that's called Howtoons, and we draw little adventure science projects for kids. And so I've certainly thought a lot about how to get more people involved in being creative and playful. You know, the previous speaker talked about her concerns for the environment and global warming. I think we should be starting to think about how do we train a generation of kids to solve those problems and deal with those problems. And so I like the playful approach to education, so maybe working in combining those things is something I've also been thinking about.
Claire Tomlin, you're a year into this now. Has it given you room to play in a certain way, to do something quite different from what you were focusing on before?
Well, I won the award at a time when I was starting a fairly new research project in the area of systems biology. So using mathematical models and analysis tools to help try to understand different kinds of protein regulatory networks. And I'd been working on this for a little while, but kind of kept it small. This was a departure from what I'd been working on for about the past 15 years, which is a lot of work in mathematical modeling and analysis for air traffic control with NASA. And I think this award, and it's not only over the past year, but it's given me a little bit of a perspective to think about longer term in the future, how I might best think about really going into more detail in this area of systems biology. So, for example, taking a sabbatical, but really just using that sabbatical to learn and to take courses in to sort of build up my foundation in biology, where the last course I took was really in my first year of my undergrad.
So is it taking a discipline that you have, an expertise that you have in mathematical analyses that you've previously used to develop ways that to help planes not crash, and taking it to something entirely different, like genetics and biology? Same set of skills, but applying it in a new way?
Yes, that's what it is. I'm using the same kinds of mathematical models, developing new variants of analysis tools, and I'm using them in a more of a reverse engineering sense. So we're trying to, so from looking at data of biological systems, we're trying to almost intuit out with mathematical models what the underlying structure of the protein regulatory network in one particular project is. And so whereas in the engineering projects with air traffic control and collision avoidance, it's really a design moving forward from models to control system design, this is kind of moving backwards but using the same kinds of tools.
And what about the way in which the tools that you've developed, Peter Glick, have been changed by this? You've focused on water in particular, other environmental concerns. Was this an opportunity to become more interdisciplinary, to approach things in a different way?
Well, actually, for me, the answer is sort of no. I would say, first of all, that the MacArthur grants are not necessarily given to make people change what they're doing. Mm-hmm. As much as it's often an acknowledgement of what they've done or what they're doing, often in fields that are not traditionally acknowledged in academia or business or society or whatever. In my case, I was one of the founders of the Pacific Institute in Oakland, which is a Bay Area think tank, and we work on a wide range of interdisciplinary issues already. The idea of the Institute was always to try and be flexible in ways traditional academia or traditional think tanks aren't, to look at global environmental challenges, community health challenges, in new ways of thinking about international security. And to be honest, we've kept doing that. That was the philosophy of the Institute from the beginning. And to some degree, what this award has been is an acknowledgement that that's a reasonable way to look at the world, that the world really needs some of these non-traditional, some non-traditional thinking in order to tackle these pretty big problems. And that's really what for me the award has done. It's provided, in a sense, a validation of the whole approach of this way of thinking.
The MacArthur, how they describe the awards themselves is that they go to, quote, people who have shown extraordinary originality and dedication in their creative pursuits and show a marked capacity for self-direction. Is that part of it too, Peter Glick, that they want to reward people who are original but also sort of out there on their own somewhere, working in a new way?
Well, I think so. The MacArthur Fellows through time have been a pretty eclectic group of people. I mean, it's a tremendously diverse, odd group of people, if you think about it. But I guess what they have in common is that they're doing unusual things that may not be traditionally recognized by the kinds of things that our society rewards. That kind of a new approach, the commitment that some of these people have taken, I think is what's reflected here.
Peter Glick is the president of the Pacific Institute and was named a MacArthur Fellow in 2003. Has it changed your life, Claire Tomlin, in any specific ways?
It hasn't changed my life in any specific ways. I've been thinking, especially over the past week since the new fellows were announced this week, so it all brought, you know, last year back to me. I think it's given me a little more of a perspective on, and this is really reinforcing what Peter just said, that I view the grant more as an enabler to remove some of the problems in trying to find, for example, funding to do some of the maybe more esoteric things in systems biology that I wouldn't have funding for. And it's maybe also given me a sense of increased confidence in what I was doing before, that, you know, it's okay to work on two very different projects and to enjoy both projects and to have students working with me on these different projects. And it's okay not to focus on one thing only. So it really reinforced that and made me feel good.
And is that something important that perhaps everyone can benefit from, the sense of not being too siloed off, that it's important to think about multiple ways that you can accomplish things and to work together across a variety of disciplines?
Well, that's been very important for me. From the beginning, I've been always interested in not only a theoretical approach and the algorithms and designing efficient and computationally good algorithms, but also in solving real and interesting problems. And these problems come from a variety of different areas. So I think for me, that's been very important. There are incredibly creative and, superb scientists and engineers who work only on one thing their whole careers. And I think that's fabulous. It's just not for me.
How about for you, Saul Griffith? Do you think this will give you the opportunity to work in different ways? Or is it really the opportunity, as you said before, to just concentrate on something that you can do now because you don't have to worry about filling out a grant for a particular thing?
I often don't feel like I have control over my own brain and the directions it goes. So I'm not sure that it will change what I do in that I just sort of tend to do what's at the top of my stack. But I think it will certainly help me take more risks on things that have unknown outcomes or no clear immediate goal. So it's really wonderful just to I think the lowering of the risk in your life is probably going to be the most fabulous aspect of it.
Because you don't necessarily have to prove it. You don't have to make the case. You now have the freedom, the gift to just go out and try it.
Yeah, I guess I have often worked on intuition. This actually sort of says, well, you know, the world thinks your intuition is pretty good. Go and throw it at a couple of new problems.
Give us some examples of how your intuition has led you so far. I mentioned in the introduction the idea that you've developed this inexpensive way or working on a way to create inexpensive corrective lenses for people in developing nations. Where else has your intuition led you? What are some of the other projects that Squid Labs and Emeryville are now undertaking?
So I should mention that I still feel terribly embarrassed about the whole grant because I've always collaborated with a lot of wonderful people. And I guess one of the, after the shock and the joy of getting the phone call, I was like, oh, but I have these 35 friends who I work with and love who would all do great things.
Well, you could divide it by 35 if you really wanted to.
No, oh, there's an idea. I'm sure they're all out there listening and would love that concept. So maybe that will happen. But I'm working with a fellow called Colin Bultaup right now. He's largely shouldering the burden on this project now. We're building the power supply for the $100 laptop. So this is a human power supply that you can generate about 20 watts with. And I think that's got wonderful applications in both in all parts of the world. And that will be attached to water purification and rural lighting systems in developing countries, as well as powering cell phones and mobile communications. So that's a fabulous project. Another thing that I'm loving being involved with is Instructables.com, which is this sort of unusual open source hardware DIY type wiki. I don't know how you describe it.
I'm not sure I understood that, but yeah.
I think it's a place where people go to document how they make things that they like to make, and then they can share those instructions and other people can build upon those instructions to make more elaborate things. And people use this for everything from how to fix cars through to creative taxidermy, even to, you know, documenting their science projects. So it's a really fabulous to see how in sort of a community of people who are interested in building things and the instructional side of building things, what they do when you give them a platform.
Creative taxidermy?
Creative taxidermy. It's actually, you know, there are people who like to take mice and ducks and make mutant mice ducks combinations with taxidermy.
It's probably a good thing we're coming up on a break. I'm not sure we should probably
yeah, this is a big black hole.
A lot further. We are going to pause in just a moment, Peter Gluck. But has it been life-changing for you? You're the furthest into this process, having been named a fellow 4 years ago. Has it really altered your direction? Or as you say, has it sort of encouraged you to keep doing what you're doing?
It has. I don't mean to be too blasé about this, but it hasn't been it hasn't been life changing. I love what I do. I love the kind of work that I do, the analysis that I do, the intersection of environmental issues and development and politics and science, and so it's given me, I think, the support to continue to do what I'm doing. It's to some degree, it's given me the ability to turn down other offers. Mm-hmm. I work in a nonprofit, as many, many people do. And for people who work in nonprofits, it's not usually about the money, for obvious reasons. And so the reduction of risk, as Saul said, to some degree, this is reduction of risk, mental risk and professional risk.
And to be true to your school. I mean, it gives you that gift to stay focused on what it is that you love most.
That's right.
Back with more in just a moment. We're going to take a short break, and we welcome your calls. If you want to talk to three really smart people, you can do that now. The phone number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. More with our MacArthur Fellow winners in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson, filling in this morning for Michael Krasny. Our topic this hour, the MacArthur Fellowships, the so-called Genius Awards that went out to 24 people just last week, two of whom reside in the Bay Area. And we're talking this morning with three MacArthur winners, one who got the call this past week and two who received it in previous years. Saul Griffith is with us. He's the co-founder of Emeryville's Squid Lab, where he works on a variety of inventions. Peter Gluck is the president of the Pacific Institute for Studies and Development Environment, and Security. He was named a MacArthur Fellow in 2003. And Dr. Claire Tomlin, who was named a Fellow last year. She teaches at both Stanford and Berkeley. Peter Glick, before the break, you were talking about how working in the world of nonprofits, something that the MacArthur Fellowship gives you, is an opportunity to stay with what you care about most. And something you also frequently hear in the nonprofit arena is not only how hard it is to get funding for doing what you do, but when you do get funding, it's usually with specific strings attached. We want you at the Pacific Institute to do X. This doesn't have that. So it really opens up the book in a way.
Well, no strings attached money is extremely rare, as one might imagine. It's very rare in the nonprofit world and in the foundation world. It's actually something in the broader sense that, frankly, I think foundations ought to think more deeply about. If you find organizations and individuals that do interesting, innovative, smart things, they shouldn't be constrained by project money, by foundations who think they know what they ought to do, but more general support should be given to them. And general support is a rare thing, and it's extraordinarily valuable and useful.
Have you found that in your career as well, Claire Tomlin, that this is an extraordinarily unusual thing? And what might be done to encourage more of this idea, because it provides you with that sort of open-ended opportunity?
I mean, as a university professor, all of our grant funding is earmarked for certain purposes. And to some extent, we can guide that in choosing the programs that we respond to and how we write the grant proposals. But this is completely no strings attached, and that's very unusual in the academic setting as well. And so I think it really encourages what they want to do, which is to foster that creativity and to support new ideas which wouldn't necessarily have been supported otherwise, or which you would have to find possibly different kinds of funding sources for.
It's venture capital in a sense, right, Saul Griffith, to do what you want to do. It's venture capital without the venture being necessarily defined.
Yeah, I was about to say I'm not sure that I think that it's no strings attached. As far as I can tell so far, my own pressures on me doing good things with this no strings attached capital is fairly high.
Do you feel a sense of obligation about?
Absolutely. This really is sort of this odd gift from the universe. When going back to the original phone call, it really felt almost like the Mission Impossible phone call. You know, your mission, if you choose to accept, is to spend $500,000 very wisely. I certainly feel a sense of obligation, responsibility. Yeah.
Do you feel that, Claire Tomlin, a real sense of obligation about how you use this money, use this time, use this gift?
Oh, definitely. And I've spent some time over the past year learning more about the MacArthurs and who they were, and it's interesting. They were, they're industrialists, but made a lot of money, but they lived very frugally, and I think that's an interesting point that they endowed this wonderful foundation and this wonderful fellowship, but they used to live in a very modest apartment next to one of their real estate developments in Florida. And it makes me think that, there's always an obligation, but this is kind of an added obligation that here are these people who really cared about this foundation that really cares about creativity and is giving these wonderful awards.
Claire Tomlin, one of our guests this hour, one of the MacArthur Fellows. She received her award in 2006. We welcome your calls and participation in our conversation, too. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org, forum@kqed.org. I wanted to ask you about mentors, whether you've had them in your life and whether or not you take that also as part of the obligation with this to provide encouragement to people who might be the next generation. You talked earlier, Saul, about how you want to help kids learn certain things because they're going to have to contend with these sorts of problems. Do you see that as part of your role in this now that you're a newly anointed MacArthur Fellow to sort of mentor other future inventors?
I think I'm already well on that road. I'm not sure that I ever formally had mentors myself, but informally I've had dozens. I guess probably starting with my own parents, who were both very keen on learning. And I know this summer my company had something like 13 interns, so we were certainly trying to mentor those interns from high school through to college. To encourage them to become inventors. So I think absolutely. I almost won't be able to help sort of trying to foster more kids to be inventors. And, you know, my general advice to them is to learn to live very cheaply so that you can struggle through the early part of your career and, you know, continue to be creative. It may feel like it's not rewarded in universities and in sort of a traditional educational outcome, but I think creativity is very much rewarded if you stay with it for the long haul.
How do you see that, Peter Glick? Do you see that as part of the obligation that comes with being a MacArthur Fellow?
Well, I actually think it's an obligation, a broader obligation. I had a mentor. I had a lot of mentors, but some special ones who were hugely influential in my life. And I treasure that, and I value that, and I'd like to think that I mean, I'm not in a traditional university setting, and so I don't have the opportunity to be a traditional academic mentor. But I work at a research institute. We have an incredibly high-quality young staff that's enthusiastic about these difficult challenges, these difficult issues. And I talk to a lot of people. I give a lot of talks. I do think that the vision that we have at the institute, that the challenges that face us, the problems that face us are interdisciplinary and complex, but actually have solutions, is a lesson we don't hear very often. Mm-hmm. And getting that lesson out is certainly part of what I've always tried to do.
Claire Tomlin, you work in a field where traditionally, at least, there haven't been lots of women. As I recall, when you got the MacArthur Fellowship a year ago, you were the only woman in your department at Stanford. I don't know if that's still true today at either Stanford or Berkeley. But do you feel an additional sense of responsibility about that, about encouraging more women in particular to follow the path that you follow?
I've always been a proponent of bringing more women into engineering. Through going and talking to giving talks at high schools and encouraging girls from a young age to think about the kinds of fun you can have in an engineering program. There are a few women in my department at Berkeley, not very many, it's still quite small, but it's growing, and I do feel an obligation to encourage and to recruit more women into faculty positions, for example. And probably the most effective way I can think of doing that right now is providing good mentorship to women graduate students. And that's always been very, very important to me. So that maybe this has enforced it a little bit more, but that hasn't really changed over the course of the past year.
Claire Tomlin, one of our MacArthur Fellows, joining us this hour. Again, if you'd like to join us, here's the number again. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Where do you look for inspiration? Does it, you were saying earlier, Saul Griffith, that you sort of don't feel like you're necessarily in charge of your brain. I'm curious about where you look for inspiration, or do you just, is part of it just allowing your brain to go where it goes?
This is the terribly difficult question. This is actually sort of why I'm uncomfortable with the term genius and that whole thing. I wish they called this the Smarty Pants Grants to take the edge off it a little. But I read prolifically across a very broad array of subjects, from science fiction to, you know, the deep technical literature to nonfiction and fiction of many varieties. And I think it's the sort of collision of ideas from pretty disparate sources that sort of leads to new and interesting things to do. And I think just, you know, observing the world keenly is, you know, you're always, I think people ask, what is an inventor? I think it's someone who sees a problem or a frustration with the world and tries to change it. They don't necessarily change it for the good often, but, you know, they're always looking at the world and how things may be improved to improve the human condition or the environmental condition or whatever it is.
How do you look for inspiration, Peter?
Yeah, let me say a couple of things about that. First of all, Saul, your comment about the word genius is apropos. I don't think there's a MacArthur fellow who doesn't hate that appellation because... Yeah.
I know, you know, even in writing the introduction, I felt obliged to say the so-called Genius Award and then immediately sort of wished that I could cross out the line. But that's always comes with it.
Hitherto, we'll just call it the Smarty Pants Grant.
It's known as that. The MacArthur Foundation doesn't call it that.
Right.
We don't – I don't think fellows – I mean, it's a terribly misused word, overused word. I mean, deep down, how many of us don't love to think that maybe there's some kind of genius in us? But there are geniuses out there, and there are very few of them, and they're rare commodities. And so it's a little bit of an odd term, and it makes all of us feel a little odd. In terms of inspiration, I think there's inspiration all over the place. I read very widely also. I love science fiction. I love history. I love the technical literature I'm interested in. And I never know when I'm going to read something or hear something that strikes some kind of a spark that says, oh, there's an interesting point. What if we thought about it this way? It you never know. But it happens. It happens all the time. I'm constantly making little notes about, okay, maybe I ought to look at it this way. I'm looking at it the wrong way, and here's a different way to think about a problem or a different person I ought to talk to, because there are a lot of smart people out there.
And is that part of what the award grants, is this ability to say, well, you never know, and I'll just pursue this. I'll just stay open.
Well, that's certainly my situation is I'm in an organization that is very flexible. We have the ability to some degree to tackle things all of a sudden that we think need to be tackled. We do long-term research. We do sort of quick, short-term stuff as well. And the ability to be flexible, to take on a short-term thing and set aside the long-term thing for a little while, is a great ability to have.
Both Peter and Saul, Claire Tomlin, have talked about reading broadly and making connections across various fields. You're doing that now, taking your background in engineering and computer science and aeronautics and moving into the field of genetics and biology. And you read now about, at universities in particular, this interest in trying to foster that you have the professor of Shakespearean literature or whatever working with a computer scientist, because who knows what they might come up with. Do you see that more in university life now, an interest in erasing some of those boundaries and providing more opportunity to just sort of open up the windows a little higher?
Oh, definitely. I was at Stanford for 9 years and now I'm at Berkeley. And in both of those places, it's really a big emphasis in, especially with biology, bringing in different areas together and using them to try to help solve some very difficult problems in biology. So Stanford has started, and this was really how I got into it, when I was starting as an assistant professor there, they were starting a BioX program, which means bio dash, and then the X is supposed to stand for pretty much anything, mathematics, statistics, engineering. And so I met a lot of the biologists that got me to my current, I'm collaborating with a fantastic biologist at Stanford right now. At Berkeley, there's a big push in an area called synthetic biology, which is trying to use tools from engineering and components from biology to engineer new materials or new substances. And this is very exciting. I view this as, for me, something that in the long term I'd be very interested in. Right now I'm trying to use tools to help understand biological systems, but actually now turning that around and trying to engineer biological systems is fabulously exciting. And so it really requires cross-disciplinary people from different departments, people from different disciplines.
We've been having, I think, a bit of a question with Mark with our phone calls, but I think we've got them working. So we'll go to phone calls in just a second. But it really comes back, Saul Griffith, to this question that Peter mentioned earlier about sort of who knows, right? So you have this opportunity through how you're all working to allow yourself to ask the who knows question and go where that takes you.
Although someone pointed this out to me yesterday, they said the only problem with this is that you're probably more time limited than money limited by this stage in your career in many respects. Yeah. And so the difficulty is, you know, it's not like I'm already working something like 18 hours a day, so it's not like I can add a few more hours work to spend this money. So it's almost like fundamentally I'm going to have to get better at managing and pushing things out. So that's the hard conclusion.
If the gift had been 500,000 free hours rather than $500,000,
If I could make that trade, I would do it instantly. Yeah.
And to our callers, Gary joins us first in Oakland. Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Yeah. This is probably for Claire, and I realize it's in a somewhat different area than you're in, but it does have to do with sort of system organizing. I'm the director of Fair Elections, and in that role, I developed a new way to help any kind of social movement, particularly the movement we badly need in this country to create a strong pressure to prevent further global warming. Of getting many more people civically engaged through not just 5,000 or 10,000, but through 40,000 house parties, a series of house parties that keeps doubling every 3 weeks, somewhat like Tupperware. And I'm finding it, you know, being an unknown, not a famous person or anything, hard to get access to the large organizations to be taken seriously. It's sort of like people look at it and they say, it sounds too good to be true. And I'm wondering if you're willing to give any contact information or if you have a gatekeeper so that I could email you more about this.
I'm not sure Claire can help you specifically with that, Gary, but let's broaden the question a bit to, you know, people want to do things. Do you have suggestions for people who are wanting to start up? Sounds like Gary wants to start up something that has to do with social engagement in particular. Do you have thoughts on how you can encourage that sort of enterprise?
I can just add maybe one point that it took me a long time, I mean several years as an assistant professor, to start getting grants rolling in the areas that I was working in and getting support. And I think it was just the persistence. Even if I would fail on one thing or one source, I would just keep trying, thinking that, you know, I think my idea is good. I'm just going to keep trying. So that's a very general point.
Persistence, Peter Glenn?
Well, it's hard to give Gary a specific suggestion, in part because the MacArthur Fellows are really a diverse group of people. I mean, they're inventors and engineer, computer scientists and environmental people and sculptors and dance and social activists. I mean, it's really a mix of people. And I think maybe what all of them might say is pursue what you want to do. Do what you want to do. If you can find the resources wherever to pursue your interest, that's what they're trying to support, and that's, I think, what they're trying to acknowledge.
Ricardo joins us next in San Francisco. Ricardo, go ahead.
Oh, hello. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And congratulations to all of you. Now, I'm calling in regard to looking at a larger picture. You've all climatized yourself, it seems, in this group predominantly to science, especially Claire in physics and so forth. And I was looking recently at a book that I've told many people about. It's by Norman Friedman, Bridging Science and Spirit. And I wanted to find out if any of you had any alternative practices that you haven't gone out and told the world about while you were achieving on a, let's say, your own personal level of intellect. And then did you have a God seed item thing, a collective that's inside you that is the universe, the theory of God, a consciousness, something that kept you going beyond just your normal schooling and practices, mentors, and so forth?
Ricardo, thank you.
Appreciate it.
I have surfing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure we all have something. You know, everybody has a spiritual core of some kind, religious or not. You happen to have a bunch of scientists or people interested in the physical world, maybe more than anything else. But there are artists, as I say, among the MacArthur winners, artists and dancers, and quite often spiritual group. So I do think probably all of us try and bridge the divide, if there is such a divide, between science and spirit in some way.
Regina Carter, the jazz violinist, a MacArthur Fellow, was on this program last year. And it is worth noting, Peter Glick, that although we're more scientifically and inventively represented this morning, that for people in the arts, this has to be an extraordinary gift. If you're a dancer and you suddenly have $500,000, that's really something and really, really unusual.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know that that's true.
Diana joins us next in Danville. Diana, go ahead.
Oh, good morning. I am absolutely honored, and congratulations to all of you. Everything all of you have said has just so sparked my spirit and my intuition. I'm a retired RN. I will be 64 in December. I have a background of modern dance, but what I've learned more and to trust is to just be still and know, and listening to my intuition, and things will come up. How did each of you start building that confidence to start listening to that intuition? Because I do believe we all come from a core of great humanity and good heart. That's my question.
Diana, thank you. Saul Griffin.
I think I actually developed a terrible memory for failure, and that has been my my greatest asset. So I tend to just do lots and lots and lots of things and fail very, very frequently and then forget them. And then when you have a success, you feel like it was all easy. And so that was, success by large-scale experimental failure. Yeah,
that's interesting. Do you find that to be true, Claire Tomlin, that you need to allow yourself first the opportunity to fail and then not get too burdened by it?
I think that's definitely true. For me, I think the confidence in yourself comes over time, and it doesn't start, you know, with your first job or your degree or you know, even high school. It's back when you're a child, and for me, I think it's my parents who instilled this sense of, you know, you can do what you want to do, and you should pursue it, and you'll be good at it.
Just a few moments left. I'm curious about where you will be going from here. Peter Glick, you're coming to the end, I suppose, of your time as a MacArthur Fellow, or are you always a MacArthur Fellow? Does the clock tick on this, or once a fellow, always a fellow?
Well, you're always a MacArthur Fellow, if I understand it correctly. The money stops. And so you know, there is a 5-year period in which the checks sort of arrive, but this is actually the 20th anniversary of the Pacific Institute this year. The institute was founded 20 years ago, and we're thinking about what we do, and we're celebrating what we've done, and I think we're looking to another 20 years. There's no shortage of the problems we try and deal with. We haven't solved them, unfortunately. That's the bad news. And so there's going to be plenty of work for lots of people for a long time.
And what will the MacArthur Fellowship in particular have done to further that future?
Well, actually, to some degree, the MacArthur Fellowship, at least for me, it's not about the money. It's about the recognition. It's an appellation. It's a title. It's a public acknowledgement that something that somebody is doing is worthwhile and valid and noteworthy. And if that's the case, then maybe continuing to do what we do is noteworthy and valid and worthwhile. And in the long run, I guess many years from now, looking back and saying, well, okay, somebody did say this was worth doing, and so I kept at it.
And what will you keep at, Claire Tomlin, now that you're a MacArthur Fellow, and how do you think it will continue to accelerate what it is that you want to accomplish?
Well, I've recently moved from Stanford to Berkeley, and I think that having this award has made it easier, and I probably continue to make it easier over the next few years to establish the collaborations that are essential for me to continue what I'm doing. So I work on core mathematical models, and I branch out and learn about different applications. So I need collaborators, like different biologists, for example, and that's been happening over the past year. So I think that it's not changing really what I would have done, but it's probably it's an enabler. It's making it easier and maybe even faster to do the things that I want to do.
And do you have a specific dream in terms of the things that you want to do? Is there something that you hope 20 years from now you'll be able to look back and say, that's what I've done?
Well, in all of the things that I've been working on, I'd really like to help people. And I think, working with air traffic control, you can very directly help people by improving the efficiency of the system. I think with systems biology, the excitement, and this is really the long-term excitement, is that perhaps by helping to understand the different mechanisms in development better, you can help to understand how to prevent or solve different genetic disorders. And I think that's a dream, which is a very long-term dream for me.
And your dream, Saul Griffith, last on what you hope this fellowship enterprise that you're now 1 week into will entail?
I have a lot of dreams, and I probably, like everyone at the table here, most of the people I work with, everyone just works towards their dreams, and these things that come along maybe help you go faster, but most of the people I know are tenaciously pursuing what they're doing anyway. Right now I'm working on a large-scale renewable energy project, and that looks like a pretty much a 10-year sort of project. So to dream beyond that, or to dream little side dreams that maybe the MacArthur Fellowship can help me pursue along the way, is a nice thing, and I'm sure a lot of those will be helping my various other projects move along or starting new, just whimsical or beautiful projects.
And in the end, it's the MacArthur Fellowship that will, in a way, allow you to go where your brain takes you, right?
Absolutely. But I think, and so far, the best thing from the MacArthur Fellowship is it introduces you to new people and new chances for collaborating. Today I've met two more great people, so it's great in that respect.
We'll leave it there. Saul Griffith, thanks very much, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Claire Tomlin, thank you, and congratulations
as
well.
Thank you very much.
And Peter Glick, same to you.
Thanks, Dave.
Pleasure to have all of you here. Forum is produced by Robin Giannatasio-Mall and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, our executive producer, Raul Ramirez, and our engineer this hour, Danny Bringer. I'm Dave Iverson. Michael Krasny is back tomorrow. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.